Welcome to the virtual coffee break presented by OpenText Portfolio. We host concise, relevant discussions every month on a diverse set of topics related to digital transformation, information governance, process management, and data privacy. If you have questions or topic suggestions, we can be reached at igc_sales@opentext.com. Thank you, and now enjoy the podcast. Welcome, everyone, and welcome to our virtual coffee break, Conducting Effective Software Evaluations. My name is Doug Stewart, and I'm a Senior Director of Solutions Consulting at OpenText. I'm joined today by two of my OpenText colleagues to explore this important, but often overlooked and sometimes forgotten, topic of how to conduct successful and effective software evaluations. So today on our panel, first we have Barbara Ann Elstone, an account executive at OpenText. Barbara Ann has 20 plus years of experience in software sales with startup, high growth, and market leading technology companies. She's definitely a seasoned sales executive with an extensive track record selling enterprise class software into large and medium or mid-sized organizations. Also joining us today is Dave Hinkle, a senior solutions consultant at OpenText. Dave has over 20 years of technical solution consulting experience covering both the pre-sale and the post-sale stages. In his current role, Dave works directly with customers to gain an understanding of their business problems, and then, most importantly, he uses his expertise to propose solutions that can overcome and solve these challenges. So welcome, Barbara Ann and Dave. To get the conversation started today, I thought we should define, kind of make sure we're all on the same page by defining some terms. And you know, like the software industry as a whole, this evaluation process, software evaluation process, definitely has its own jargon. For example, you know, the terms trial and POC and POV and pilot, among others, get tossed around a lot. So Dave, I thought it would be really helpful if you would just, like I said, get us all on the same page by defining these terms and also kind of indicating which terms we'll be using throughout this discussion.
Well, our team calls evaluation software deployments proof of concept. And those involve setting up the test system, installing software, configuring software, loading test data, doing functional tests, which, you know, are usually like end user type task, you know, driven testing. And we also do sometimes the non-functional testing like performance testing. It doesn't really matter, you know, for purposes of our discussion today, whether you want to call it a proof of concept, a proof of technology, a trial evaluation, test drive. We'll call it a proof of concept. And we're going to talk about what we found are best practices from both the customer point of view and as well as from our point of view as a vendor to make it a very efficient process.
Well, good. Okay, so POC we're agreed on basically encompasses those other terms, trial, test drive, POV, or even pilot. So with that settled, I think the other thing that we need to just kind of as a baseline settle is, you know, when do you do something like a proof of concept or a POC instead of a demo or with it? Does it complement to demo? You know, where do demos fall into this process?
Well, if we'll talk about demos, you know, it doesn't matter really whether they're live or recorded. You know, it's kind of a show and tell. It lets you see what the software can do, but it may be just one specific use case that was, you know, prepared in advance may or may not match exactly, you know, the customer's use case that they want to do with it. But if it's a simple kind of end user application, a demo is probably enough to know, does this do what I need it to do? You know, will it meet my requirements? But the type of software that we're involved with is usually complex, multiple product, server-based software. And the requirements are also complex from the customer. So, you know, the only way to really show that it meets requirements is to set up firsthand evaluation system to work through some of the functions and use cases.
Got it. Okay. And then, you know, I was really intrigued by Dave. You mentioned best practices earlier, and Barbara Ann, in our conversations, I know you've mentioned best practices around software evaluations, but what best practices do you recommend to your customers when you go into a software evaluation?
So I would say first, the most important thing is to make sure that we have all the right people lined up for a proof of concept, a POC, from the vendor side, our side, as well as from the customer side.
Excellent. So who are those people then?
So we would obviously want to have an executive sponsor or a champion within the customer organization to make sure that they can work within the scope of the POC to assign resources. And as well on the vendor side or our side, you want to make sure that they also have someone who's a champion of the project to do the same thing. Generally beyond that, we want to make sure that there's additional roles like a project manager, unless you know the champion's doing the hands-on management of the project, and any other resources. So if in the cases like Dave mentioned with end user testing, we would maybe want to have some end users who were going to be able to participate, maybe even developers or engineers, depends on the product and the scope of the project. And of course, the other thing we want to make sure of is that the budget and costs, they've all been discussed and up front when we're talking about software. So we want to make sure that there's also support from the finance side of the customer organization to make sure that if the software evaluation is conducted and is successful, that we can move on to the purchase phase, which of course means we have to have approval from the finance team, procurement, maybe it's even the C-level executives in the organization that make that final decision.
Yeah, excellent point. We've all been in those situations where we didn't have the kind of the financial buy-in, and we've gone through a POC, and then we have to fight that battle afterwards. So good point. But so Dave, Barbara Ann kind of mentioned the executive sponsorship and the management buy-in and finance, even the line of business. Who else though should participate in POCs?
Well, one of the key people Barbara Ann mentioned was who's going to be the project manager for the customer's efforts and resources, but there also needs to be a primary point of contact at the vendor, who's sort of that counterpart, you know, whether you want to call them the liaison or the POC manager. You know, that's typically handled by our account executives, but, you know, kind of depends on the size of the project, on what type of person that has to be. So that's important to have that primary point of contact on both sides. But as for the rest of the POC team, it's going to be a mix from both customer resources and the vendors, you know, resources. But the specific mix or skills needed are going to depend on the types of tasks needed to be done. And those will be divided up of what tasks are owned by the customer and what tasks are the vendor owns and they're responsible to perform.
Got it. And Barbara Ann, you know, as you're putting a POC together and progressing a POC through, what are the kind of the key elements and types of tasks that need to be done to actually run a successful POC?
So I would say the primary and most important thing is the plan. We want to make sure we create a really a structured plan around this proof of concept project, because it is a project. You know, we've worked with people and have seen people in the past with different organizations just want to jump right in. Of course, it's exciting and we want to install software and test the system out, but without a formal plan in place. And that can be bad both for the customer organization and also for the vendor that they're working with, because we know that time is valuable. So we don't want the customer to waste time and their resources on something that's not going to meet their needs. And we as a vendor, they need to know if the software doesn't meet the requirements of the customer. We want to know that sooner rather than later. So a formal plan going into this really makes the trial go as effectively as possible, sets up expectations, and also can really define the scope of the project.
Yeah, definitely. I know both of you have heard me say this before, but badly paraphrase Yogi Berra, but you know, there's that notion of, hey, if you don't know where you're going, you'll be lost when you get there. So without a plan, we've seen POCs definitely veer very, very much off course. So Dave, what really needs to go into this plan to make it successful?
The type of plan we're talking about is essentially, it's a project plan, but there are some differences from, you know, a typical project plan. But it does have the same project plan things, like you're going to have your tasks defined, who's responsible for them, the estimated durations for those. But in order to get there for the POC, all of those tasks are really going to be driven by what are the use cases that need to be, you know, demonstrated and worked through. But it's important to keep in mind, we're not, the POC's purpose shouldn't be to try to go through every possible use case. It's really, you know, more important to focus on what are those mandatory, you know, critical use cases that if one of them doesn't work, then the solution doesn't, you know, is got to be, you know, is not going to be usable. You know, and so it's really simple as saying, okay, if a given use case doesn't work, is this one going to be a showstopper? Does this totally reject a solution? Those are the ones that should be in there. And if it's not something mandatory, then it probably doesn't belong in the POC because you're not trying to do everything you would do for the production install. But I do want to stress that the mandatory use cases, ideally, those are identified upfront as part of qualifying the solution to determine that, yes, this is one that we actually want to go through firsthand and see how it does these use cases. So the mandatory use cases should already be defined during discovery and qualification discussions leading up to the POC. So with those mandatory use cases identified, it's easier to break those down and say, all right, here are the use cases that we're going to include in the POC. What tasks are needed? Now, obviously up front, there's gonna be a lot of tasks like server provisioning and networking and things. And then that also helps identify what people, because in large organizations, the person that, you know, provisions a server might not be the same person that installs the software. It's probably going to be a different person that does network and DNS configuration. So, you know, some of those little tasks have to be broken down, especially when there's different people performing them, getting everything ready before you can even start doing the use case tests. So even though it's a test environment, it still has to go through all the normal processes to deploy a system in a customer's environment.
Yeah, good point. And I was really taken by your point about making sure that you try to find any of those gotchas or those deal breakers up front, even before starting the POC. Suss that out before you start the POC. I mean, if there's something that software just won't do, no need to head into a POC to try to demonstrate that it definitely won't do that. So good, right. Good point. Hey, Barbara Ann, are there other things that a plan should have?
So like any project plan, there definitely needs to be a timeline associated with the POC. So because it's not like an implementation, full implementation project into development or into production, like Dave said, we want to make sure that we talk through with the customer and the vendor the tasks that are associated with the POC and the timeline durations that are expected with each of those tasks, and then anyone that's associated to do those tasks on the customer side or the vendor side. So we know as a vendor that customers' resources are not going to be able to dedicate 100% of their time to doing their tasks. So they have to have a balance between the POC and their other day-to-day requirements of their role. So we need to be realistic and reflect the availability of the project team on the customer side. One other thing that we as a vendor always have in place in our POCs is to make sure that the project plan has success criteria or milestones tied to that, so that we can make sure that we are checking off the boxes as we go through that POC evaluation to make sure that we can evaluate the progress. Has it met that success criteria? If so, then we can move on to the next stage. So that allows us both for the customer and the vendor to make sure that we are on track, we're meeting those goals and expectations, whether we should continue or whether we should stop if it's met those use cases, as we've said. So normally in a project plan, you'll have contingencies or extra time associated for delays, but we don't really build in stop criteria for a project in something like a major project. But in a POC, we make sure that we do put in criteria if it does not meet those requirements so that we can stop and don't have to continue. We can halt right then and there if it's deemed unsuccessful.
Yeah, good point. Just, you know, you know, don't waste time and effort once you qualified out. So Dave, can you, Barbara Ann was talking about the milestones. Can you give some examples of what a POC milestone might look like or what milestones might look like?
Well, yeah, the first one is pretty simple because you have to have the environment that you're going to execute in deployed. So that one's, fairly straightforward. We don't expect that one to have any issues. It's just a question of time, how quickly can the environment be prepared. But then after that, we like to set up each use case as sort of a milestone. Because these are mandatory use cases, we kind of consider that like, if a milestone is a hard fail and there's no chance of a solution for it, then does it become kind of a stopping point? So we said that's sort of a showstopper. But it also provides a chance as that particular group of tasks, that use case is being worked on, is there should be feedback going, dialogue back and forth between the customer and the vendor of how that one is going to make sure that if it's not working as expected, is there a path to getting it resolved? Because it's possible that a milestone might say, well, this one's conditionally passed, but a couple things need to be changed in it. As long as, we as a vendor are able to provide a plan to say, we know how we can address this, but here's how long it would take. Do you want to do that now? Or do you want us to come back to it if we have time? Or are you just going to, take our word for it that we can definitely do this, but it might take a significant effort or customization to make it work exactly as expected. So the whole idea is that if it's conditionally passed, you move on. But if there's no way to resolve it, then that's a stopping point.
Got it. Well, interesting. And so, we've talked about milestones and timelines, but what's a duration of a POC? What's an acceptable duration, I guess, of a POC or a standard, if there is such a thing?
Yeah, so that's kind of that can be a loaded question because that's, it's not the same from one customer to another because it can range from a few weeks for a very small single point solution to several months if we're talking about server-based software and multiple software solutions that are being included in the POCs. The more involved that they are, the more business use cases that we're trying to prove out, they're going to obviously need longer duration. So we have to be realistic about that. So they can go from a few weeks to several months, depending on the complexity. But we do also want to say, of course, that it's important that, if you estimate a POC is going to be completed in 6 weeks to, 2 months, and it takes 18 weeks to complete, well, obviously something went wrong there. Something went off the rails. So what we want to do is avoid that at all costs. And that's where those milestones and the project plan come into play to make sure that we avoid that and there's no slips as we go through the POC. So as a vendor, we would expect that the sponsor on the customer side, as well as our own side, has the authority to address any delays that are taking place, help to rectify those within the organization. And if we are the responsible for those delays, we want to make sure that those things are being addressed in a timely manner to the customer's satisfaction. So let's say there's a misconfiguration or a defect in the program, we should be able to resolve that for the customer in a timely fashion and that they're also getting support to try out the software as well. So the support on a POC is different than a production environment, of course. In production, you have a fully outlined SLA with your contract as you would with any vendor. So POC support is a little bit different. It might not be the same turnaround, but it's still going to be addressed in a timely manner so that we can continue on with the POC, as Dave mentioned as well. And it gives the customer a good opportunity to not only evaluate the software, but the support that goes along with that from the vendor.
Got it. Yeah, and some of those things we've seen enough that we're very proactive about are simple things like, you come up with an 8-week timeline, and then on day one, you find out that it takes 2 weeks for them to provision a new server to install mm-hmm. the software on, which wasn't accounted for. So just sussing all that out up front in the plan can really help you come up with a really tight timeline that's actually achievable. So good, good points there. So, Barbara Ann, I guess this one kind of goes to you though. So once all the milestones are completed, what happens with, you know, at the end of a POC when you've, let's assume, successfully completed that POC?
Yeah, so generally that's something that the customer and the vendor should always have agreed to upfront. What is the final outcome of a successful POC? So that's where, in advance of a POC, we always have the discussion for, you know, what's going to happen if it's successful and the software has installed successfully and the use cases have proven out. Does the customer have to pay to continue using it? It's successful. Can they launch that into production? Can we purchase can we take the licenses that we've used for the POC and convert those into paid licenses? We as a vendor generally expect at a successful conclusion of a POC that the customer is going to go ahead and purchase the software. If all the milestones have been successfully met, the criteria have been completed, and because all the budgeting and financial aspects have been presented up front and the sponsorship is there from the executive sponsorship, as I mentioned at the top, we should be able to proceed with purchasing the licenses at the conclusion of the POC. Basically, the POC is to determine that the technical requirements have been met, the business use cases have also been met, and we know the value that those are going to deliver to the customer. And, you know, at the outcome of a POC, that doesn't mean that as a vendor, you're not going to negotiate with your customer to talk about price or any associated cost. Negotiations always can take place after the conclusion of the POC so that we can make sure that there's no surprises from a budgetary perspective, and also that the customer is getting the software that they expect for the cost they expect in the timeline they expect.
Wow. Well put. Definitely have that game plan after the POC concludes, as Barbara Ann just outlined. So we're about at the end of our time. So any last comments, Dave or Barbara Ann?
Just one thing I want to add where I was talking about, you know, the deciding these use cases, which I kind of view as really functional requirements, that if you... you know, if a customer wants to include some non-functional requirement, you know, like typically things like those are either performance related or availability related things where, you know, there's a different type of metric used, it's important that that be decided upfront, because it can, those types of performance related tests can significantly increase the time it takes to perform the POC. And so, you know, that's kind of the one warning that I can think of is, don't try to introduce those midway through the POC, because most of the time those PNC environments aren't architected or designed for it. They're designed just to be able to, as minimal as possible, to try to shorten the timeline to be able to get through the functional requirements. That if there is an important need to have certain performance or non-functional requirements demonstrated, that might even need to be a separate POC after the functional requirements are met, because it's hard to do those at the same time, because it generally requires a different architecture completely to be able to meet performance metrics.
Yeah, excellent point. Barbara Ann, how about you?
No, I think the big thing, again, that I would reiterate is really making sure that you have a well-supported project POC team within both the vendor organization and the customer organization, that you can work collaboratively to make it a success and make sure that the customers can kick the tires of the software that they're evaluating and make a very informed decision at the conclusion of the POC.
Well, excellent. Well, with that, I want to thank you both very much for participating today and sharing your thoughts on this topic. You know, I definitely found your different perspectives really helpful. You know, you gave us basically a 360 degree view of this topic and this process. So thanks again for sharing your insights on how to conduct effective software evaluations. Also to the audience, you know, thank you for listening to this discussion. And if you have any follow-up questions, as you can see, I put our contact information up on screen. So feel free to reach out to any or all of us. Once again, thank you to everyone for joining us today. And special thanks to Barbara Ann and Dave for sharing their expertise with us. Have a great day. And we look forward to seeing you on our next virtual coffee break. Thank you very much.
Okay.